I'm Brian Curtis.
And I'm Wendy Ring. Welcome to Cool Solutions, stories of climate action from the bottom up. Plastic is 99% fossil fuel. How big a deal is that for climate change? I asked Judith Enck, a former EPA administrator who now heads a group called Beyond Plastics.
The carbon emissions from coal plants are being replaced by carbon emissions from plastic facilities. Last year alone, the production and then the end-of-life incineration of plastic added more than 850 million metric tons of greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. That's equal to the pollution from 189 new 500 megawatt coal-fired power plants. So as we are working hard to promote renewable energy and stop the burning of coal, oil, and gas, we are replacing those carbon emission reductions with new carbon emissions from ethane cracker facilities. One of the troubling things is that few people know that this is happening. If you talk to 100 members of Congress, unless they're from Western Pennsylvania or the Ohio River Valley or Cancer Alley in Louisiana, I doubt one or two of them would know what an ethane cracker facility is.
I don't know either, but I'm pretty sure that what comes out are not little cheese-flavored goldfish.
Ding! Time for a nerd minute. To find out what cracking is, I had to look up the chemistry. What enters the cracker are liquid hydrocarbons, either naphtha, a byproduct of refining crude oil, or ethane, a constituent of raw natural gas. These are heated in a furnace to about 1500 degrees Fahrenheit, which cracks open naphtha's carbon ring and knocks a few hydrogen atoms off each molecule of ethane, transforming them into ethylene, the basic building block of plastic. Then, these building blocks are linked together in a chemical reaction to form long chains called polymers. The result? Polyethylene, or what we know as number 1, number 2, and number 4 type plastic. This product leaves the plant in the form of nurdles.
John Weber is the Mid-Atlantic manager of the Surfrider Foundation. As a surfer, he knows his nurdles.
These are tiny little pieces of plastic, smaller than BBs, and if you know what you're looking for, they're all over. I walk out on my beach on any given day after a storm especially, and I can find nurdles.
If you live on the Atlantic or Gulf Coast, you probably can too. And you can join the Nurdle Patrol at a website set up by some researchers from the University of Texas, nurdlepatrol.org.
Nurdles aren't the only little pieces of plastic in the ocean. Larger plastic litter breaks down in the sun and waves.
Wave action almost serves as a paper shredder. So one plastic bottle becomes thousands of pieces of microplastics that are then easily consumed by marine life.
Scientists worry that could have serious climate consequences. The ocean currently absorbs a third of our greenhouse gas emissions. Plankton play a big role as a giant biological carbon pump. Phytoplankton, or microalgae, remove carbon dioxide from the air by photosynthesis. The algae is eaten by zooplankton, who carry the carbon via their poop and ultimately their dead bodies to the ocean floor, where it eventually turns into limestone and can stay for thousands of years. Zooplankton eat microplastic, and when they do it in the laboratory, scientists find that they consume less algae, excrete less carbon in their feces, and have fewer babies. You can see where this is going.
If the ocean's biological pump broke down completely, it would be like adding another China's worth of emissions. John says larger marine animals are also hurting from ocean plastic.
Plastic bags floating in the ocean look like jellyfish, and that's one of the things that turtles eat.
Plastic bags get stuck in the turtles' digestive tracts, making them feel full so they don't eat, or creating a complete blockage so they starve to death. A scientist reported a couple years ago that over half the world's turtles had plastic in their stomachs, but in a recent survey, it was 100%. We humans are also eating plastic.
The average American consumes about one credit card size a week of microplastics. There's microplastics in our drinking water, it's in beer, it's in honey, it's in salt, and it's in our bodies.
Metabolites of two common chemicals in plastic have been detected in over 90% of the U.S. population.
There was a study which really concerns me, which for the first time shows microplastics in human placentas.
Under the topic of get them while they're young, researchers found last year that baby bottles shed microplastic into infant formula. They estimate that the average bottle-fed infant consumes 4 million microplastic particles each day. Alas, we're making plastic faster than we can eat it. Production has risen exponentially as oil and petrochemical companies invest billions of dollars in new and expanded cracker plants, like the one Shell is building near Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, to produce 1.8 million tons of Nurdles annually.
According to the permits, this one facility could emit 2.25 million tons of greenhouse gas into the atmosphere every year.
So by weight, they'll produce more CO2 than plastic.
If plastic production keeps expanding at its current rate, its global emissions would increase to 6.5 gigatons by 2050. That's the equivalent of 1,600 coal-fired power plants. So a few well-intentioned people giving up straws might make us feel a little righteous, but it's not going to stop this petrochemical juggernaut.
I applaud people that bring their own bags and bring your reusable coffee mug to the store, but one by one, we're not going to solve the problem. We don't have the luxury of time. We really need systemic change.
What would really help is to not build those crackers. And the next episode is going to be all about that. But what would also help is a ban on single-use plastics, which make up about 40% of all plastic production.
Plastic bags account for only 5%, but Judith calls them the low-hanging fruit.
China, France, Italy, India, and 34 African countries have already banned plastic bags. There's a bill in the U.S. Congress which would do that and a whole lot more.
The Breakthrough from Plastic Pollution Act is the most sweeping plastic reduction bill we've ever seen in the Congress. It bans plastic bags, polystyrene foam, plastic straws only upon request. It also has some really smart policies like a national container deposit law or bottle bill. Simply putting a nickel deposit on beverage containers really ramps up the recycling rate.
It also includes something called extended producer responsibility. That puts the cost and responsibility for collecting, reusing, and recycling back on the companies selling products in plastic.
That's the big fix.
And the bill would impose a moratorium on permits for new cracker plants. It would be a mistake to assume that a Democratic majority in Congress means politicians are ready to go up against big oil and the soft drink corporations. That will require bottom-up pressure from their constituents. We got a great story for you about how effective that kind of pressure can be.
And how a group of small-town residents and a dozen very persistent Girl Scouts sparked the strongest statewide ban on single-use plastics in the United States.
It started in a place called Down Beach, a collection of small towns on Absecon Island, a barrier island on the New Jersey coast. Steve Giuseppe, a local resident, explains how the area got its name.
The main town on this island is Atlantic City, which was incorporated around 1850s. And south of Atlantic City was basically just sand and coastal forest. So that area south of Atlantic City was known as Down Beach.
Steve chairs the green team for the city of Margate, population 6,000, and is a member of Surfrider's South Jersey chapter. Steve's not a surfer. He prefers to dive.
Well, visibility is kind of weak up here in the North Atlantic. If you get about 20 feet, you're having a really good day. But we have a lot of shipwrecks off our shore.
They have a lot of something else, which is much easier to see. Plastic everywhere.
We see plastics in the ocean. We see plastic on the beaches. It's all over the place.
On the boardwalk, tangled up in my bushes or in my neighbor's yard.
Monica Coffey is another local resident.
It gets quite windy here along the coast, and things just have a habit of blowing around, especially lightweight plastic items. It's hard to ignore.
We have a marine mammal stranding center, and these animals come ashore, and it's unfortunate that they suffocate on these things.
It was something that had always bothered me, and my dream, if you want to call it that, was to do something about it.
John says Surfrider and other environmental groups had been trying to pass a state plastic bag ban for decades.
There had been bills put in for years that just never went anywhere, because once it gets up to the state level, then that's when you get your plastic lobbyists in the state house lobbying politicians the other way that doesn't really happen when you're talking about a local law. If a town council of maybe five, maybe seven people is going to decide on policy like that for their town, that's just way easier than getting hundreds of legislators to pass a statewide law.
Well, that was the theory. But attempts at local ordinances had not met with more success.
Because it hadn't happened here, we couldn't get it to happen.
Steve and Monica and the other Green Team members decided to make it happen in Margate.
They started out by inviting local officials and community members to a free screening of a movie about plastic held at a local restaurant.
Steve and Cookie's restaurant. The owner is very environmentally friendly, so she welcomed the showing.
But when they presented the idea of banning or charging a fee for plastic bags to the city council, they got a lot of pushback.
The council members didn't want to upset the merchants. It's going to cost them a lot of money. It's going to discourage people from buying from their store, and they may go to the next town over to buy. You know, being on the coastal towns, we are seasonal. So we only have the summer season to really make any kind of an income.
Margate's path to a bag law involved a lot of twists and turns. First, there was a detour by balloon.
The Margate Business Association president is a fisherman, and he said, virtually every time I'm out in the ocean fishing, I am bringing back armfuls of balloons.
He says, if you can work on getting a balloon ban, I'm in.
I'll help you with the businesses and the plastic bags.
Without the support of local businesses, a bag ban wouldn't pass. So Margate's Green Team banded together with the green teams from other downbeach towns to work on passing local ordinances prohibiting the release of helium balloons. These ordinances got wide community support.
These fishermen were sending me pictures of balloons that they've been spotting out in the ocean. I had so many photographs of balloons. Although we did get a fight from the Balloon Council.
I take it they didn't show up in clown suits.
When I would talk to people about this, they would almost laugh and think I was joking. But they are extremely well-funded to the tune of like $500 million. So they have a lot of clout, but they did not prevail.
Despite passing balloon ordinances in every town on the island and gaining support from Margate's Business Association, the Margate City Council still wouldn't pass a bag ordinance.
Surf Rider, the Green Teams went to a lot of council meetings where the vote was turned down.
When it became obvious that that probably was not going to happen, we turned our sights to Longport.
With just 850 residents and three stores, there wouldn't be much opposition. And they figured that being first in the state would bring even this small town big publicity.
In 2015, the Longport City Council became the first in the state to pass a bag ordinance.
It got a lot of play on the radio, in the newspaper, social media. It really worked.
And the ice was broken. One small step for Longport, a great leap for Jerseykind.
Meanwhile, in the northern part of the state, a dozen determined Girl Scouts were also working hard on a bag ordinance in their town.
Teaneck, New Jersey's Troop 19 was working toward their bronze award.
You identify a problem within your community and then take action to address that problem.
17-year-old Eliza Saletto tells the story, which started back when she was 10.
We had a representative from the Hackensack Riverkeeper come explain to us about how pollution works. And we learned that one of the biggest pollutants in our area were single-use plastic bags. In a very, 11-year-old girl way, first really struck by the impact on animals. These pictures that really struck us of a bird with a plastic bag wrapped around its head that it couldn't get off, and a turtle with plastic trash wrapped around its body. This is what animals are going through right now, but it's also the future for us. The fact that we're finding plastic in fish and in our food, and it can't be filtered out of our water system anymore, and it can't be filtered out of bottled water anymore. We're breathing it in the air we breathe. You know, that's terrifying to understand the gravity of that at 10 years old. We wanted to do an educational campaign, and that's what we started out doing, having different organizations in the area donate reusable tote bags to us, and then we handed them out in front of our local Stop and Shop.
They made a video and showed it at local film festivals, community events, and to their fifth grade classmates.
And we also created a plastic monster costume made out of 500 plastic bags that we literally went around with a shopping cart and picked up in our town that were just littered in the park and in parking lots and stuff, and then made them into the costume. Because 500 bags was the amount that a single consumer in America uses per year. That was going to be it. But as we learned more and more about the issue, it really awoke within us a passion, almost a moral drive about this is a big problem and nothing's really being done about it. In order to really make a real difference, we had to have an ordinance in our town.
So they went to the town council.
50 years ago, Teaneck was the first town in America to voluntarily vote to desegregate our schools. We have been the first in Bergen County to have the first female African-American Muslim mayor. Now, we think Teaneck should take the lead in reducing the use of plastic bags. 90% of disposable plastic bags in the U.S. are not recycled. One plastic bag has the potential of killing more than 100 animals because it takes over 1,000 years for a plastic bag to biodegrade. Plastic bags also break up into microscopic size and become ingested by marine life, which might end up as your dinner. Plastic bags are made with fossil fuels, which contributes to global warming. We walked around our town and found tons of plastic bags hanging from trees near the library, under bushes in Herrick Park and the Teaneck High School, floating around near a storm drain on Palisade Ave, waiting to be washed down into the waterways in the next rainstorm. Gross. People don't notice that throwing out their plastic bags is murdering. Yeah, I've gone there. Murdering the animals and harming their habitats. Instead of letting this harmful pollution continue, there is one simple solution. We are asking the town council to vote on a resolution to charge a fee or even ban single-use plastic bags at your next meeting in May. Let's take the lead in New Jersey and be the first town to take a stand.
They're all extremely nice. And no one's going to tell a young Girl Scout who's just trying to protect the environment that they're not going to do what they want them to do. It was very like, that's a wonderful presentation, and it's wonderful that you're taking this initiative, but...
It wasn't a month till the council voted on an ordinance. It was more like 3 years.
I don't think it was the merchants, even though that was presented as a concern. We got over 50 merchant signatures in support of our ordinance, and we even had merchants come with us to town council meetings to show their support. So I think it was more that it had only been done by one other town. Being the first is scary, but it needs to happen because then other people follow.
The Girl Scouts kept the pressure on.
We invited them to different educational events. We did a letter to the editor campaign. We had girls at every town council meeting to speak during the gun welfare section. To keep it in their minds.
Did you have some moments of, oh, why are we doing this, these stupid adults?
There were definitely moments where we doubted that people would ever listen to us or that there would ever be action taken. This is a kind of a very middle school reference, but sometimes it felt like we were Superman's parents on Krypton. In the comics, the reason Superman is sent to Earth is because his parents were scientists and knew that the planet was going to blow up and kept trying to tell people that the planet was going to blow up, but no one believed them. And so they had the foresight to send Superman to Earth. And just seeing a very obvious crisis happening, and it was taking so long to get anything done that we would just look at each other and think, this is like we're Superman's parents on Krypton. That's what it felt like sometimes. Because we believed in what we were doing and we were with people that we were good friends with, we were able to make it fun even when it was frustrating. You know, I don't think I ever had a moment where I thought, I wish I wasn't doing this.
In 2017, the Teaneck City Council passed New Jersey's second plastic bag ordinance.
Meanwhile, back in Down Beach.
We started working on Vetner, the town to the north of us.
We had a sit-down meeting with the mayor. I had contacted her and asked about scheduling this meeting. And her words were, you can come in and we can talk, but I'm going to tell you that it's not happening. So myself and a representative from our local Surfrider chapter attended this meeting with Mayor Holtzman. She's got a small grandson, We laid out a lot of the facts, the amount of plastic in the ocean, future generations, and what this is going to mean for them if things continue at the current rate. And by the end of the meeting, she was completely sold and on board.
But they still had to convince the city commissioners.
It was a hard sell, but once we started showing them photographs of what we were picking up, they decided to go with it.
After Ventnor, other towns followed.
Then Summers Point, Brigantine, a couple island communities south of us.
John Weber says that broke the logjam.
Local elected officials realized the sky's not going to fall if they pass a bag law in their town. There was a drip of towns here and there. And then in 2018, 2019, we really had a flood. And that gave momentum to passing a statewide law.
Now it was merchants, especially grocers, who wanted the law.
They were starting to see a map of New Jersey. I mean, literally, there's 500 towns in New Jersey. And if 50, you know, 10% of them already had laws on the books about bags, that's starting to look like a patchwork to them. They would rather have something that's consistent statewide.
Eliza and Troop 19 were in the thick of it.
I was invited to testify at a joint legislature session on plastic. I had brought my sister and then two other representatives of the troop. And my friend Kylie was dressing up in the plastic bag monster costume. And we were in the bathroom. And this woman walks in, and we're kind of blocking her way, using the space to get Kylie into this big plastic costume. And she's kind of annoyed about that, but, you know, we're Girl Scouts, and so we're apologizing and trying to move her out of the way so that this lady can get through. And she said, well, what are you guys here to do? Because I'm here to testify on behalf of the plastic industry. And we were taken aback because we'd never met someone before who was really personifying the issue. You know, like Kylie is getting into this plastic bag monster costume, and here's the actual plastic monster right there. It was this moment where we just kind of looked at her with wide eyes. It was no longer, I'm here to just educate people, because the approach before had just been, well, as soon as people know about the facts of what's going on, they'll of course agree with us because people are rational and can understand when there's a problem. It was now I'm here to go in front of people that not only aren't ignorant, but are actively trying to stop any kind of productive action here, who are not going to like what I'm doing. That was intimidating.
The first statewide bill put a fee on bags, but it also stopped towns from banning them.
Half of the environmental groups in New Jersey said, yeah, this is great, let's get behind this. And Surf Rider Foundation and a handful of other groups thought, you know what? We think we can do better. We think we can actually get a ban. And we put out the message, please contact the governor, ask him to veto this bill. And then, of course, had to do the same thing to get the bill that we wanted passed.
The new bill got stuck in committee until the Girl Scouts came to the rescue.
It was stalled in the budget committee, which is headed by the deputy majority leader, Senator Sarlo. And I'd been told by a couple veteran environmentalists that he was not going to be supportive of this. They were just trying to work with other less powerful members of the committee in order to push it through, but that wasn't working. It had been stalled there for months. And so I emailed his office and organized a meeting.
Back at that legislative hearing, after the bag monster emerged from the bathroom, the girls heard scientists present research findings on the negative impacts of plastic pollution.
So we wrote a bunch of that stuff down and went to this meeting with Senator Sarlo. And after a half hour meeting with him, he was ready to support the bill and get it out of his committee and to a vote in the Senate.
Do you think that youth can be a superpower? That it helps you accomplish things that maybe adults can't?
I definitely think so. You are let into rooms because you're not necessarily originally taken as seriously. But then once you're in there, maybe you say something that really lends a level of urgency to an issue or is a piece of information that no one's heard before. People might not take me as seriously initially or be patronizing. You can find a lot of power in that.
It's like being Clark Kent.
I was with the Association of New Jersey Environmental Commissions at the State House in Trenton, trying to lobby senators to vote yes on this bill. Senators were walking by, and a couple of them had security with them because of the amount of people that were there. This was obviously, you know, pre-COVID, we were not socially distanced and like packed in. And I had pamphlets with me and I realized that I am a 5'3" Girl Scout in uniform. There is no way that a security guard is going to push me. And so I was one of the only people who could give informational pamphlets to senators as they walked past, because I had the guarantee that I wasn't going to get pushed away. So that was kind of a fun realization that I had that power as a young person.
In 2020, the New Jersey legislature passed the strongest single-use plastic bag bill in the nation.
It took 2 years, and the pandemic was in the middle there, but we've got the toughest plastics law in the country now. We banned not only single-use plastic bags, but also foamed plastic, styrofoam, and plastic straws are only going to be given on request.
The plastic ban was Monica and Eliza's first foray into environmental activism, but it won't be their last. They emerged firm believers in our power to create change.
When people say, well, I'm just me, I'm just a regular person, I'm not meant to create that kind of change. You absolutely are, because who do you think other people are? They're just regular people and they see a problem and solve it.
These experiences have shown me the influence and the power of lobbyists and special interest groups. But on the other side, it's also shown me that when you have a committed group of people working together and they have their mindset on something, you better watch out.
Sometimes we all feel like Superman's parents, alone and unheard on a planet that's about to explode. But there's one big difference. We're not alone. And whether we're small people in a big town or big people in a small town, together we are mighty. You've been listening to Cool Solutions, stories of climate action from the bottom up.
Thanks to our guests, Judith Enck, John Weber, Steve Giesecke, Monica Coffey, and Eliza Saletto.
And to Scott Holmes, the whole other, Ketsa, Dan Leibowitz, Troop 19, and Tim Minchin for our music.
Whether you be rebellious and iconoclastic, or conservative, or ecclesiastic, I don't care if you're loud and bombastic, or quiet, or virtually monastic, sober, or on the floor spastic, a yoga master, or completely inelastic. I'm not trying to be ironic or sarcastic.